Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fotes, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Frances Ritchie, who reads from and discusses her new book, The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War, published by Viking. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a moment, it's time to begin.
Good evening, and welcome to the Tattered Cover. I want to thank you all for coming tonight, and thank you for your support of Tattered Cover and other independent bookstores around the country. It really makes a difference enabling us to have events like this tonight. We are really honored tonight to have Frances Ritchie here with her new book, The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. And we're very fortunate to have that son with us tonight. Ben Ritchie is here, a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and a Green Beret, and has been deployed twice to Iraq. Frances Ritchie is the poetry editor of the Bellevue Literary Review. Her first collection of poetry, called The Burning Point, won the White Pine Press Poetry Award. She is the recipient of a World of Voices grant and has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize. We will start out the evening with Frances talking and reading some of her poetry, and then Ben will join his mom at the podium, and you both all can ask questions and answers. You can ask the questions, and they'll have the answers for you, the two of them together. So please help me welcome Frances Ritchie.
Thank you, Marty, and thank you so much for having Ben and I tonight. I have to say just a short word about independent bookstores, because one of the wonderful things about being able to go out and read from The Warrior has been being invited to some amazing bookstores that I didn't even know were there, and they're exquisite, so certainly Tattered Cover is something that Ben and I have looked forward to, and we're really grateful and so glad you're here, that we still have these wonderful independent bookstores. So maybe I'll just tell you just a little bit about where these poems came from, and then I'll read you some poems, and then we'll go to Q&A. Ben was deployed to Iraq twice, and during his deployments, I was sort of at loose ends. It was hard, and friends were helpful, and you know, I prayed, and all the things that parents do when their children are in dangerous circumstances, and you can't protect them. But the thing that really helped me a lot was writing, and I had written poetry. I had been writing poetry for a long time. But I put everything that I was working on aside because really I couldn't think about anything else. I was either working or talking to friends or writing. And so a lot of writing. And so these poems came from a place of deep love for Ben, but also an awareness that we were, our relationship was strained at the time because I was against our going into Iraq. And Ben felt that this was his commitment and he was doing his duty. And so it was a tough time for us. It was hard for us to talk. And through writing the poems, it was a way of sort of talking to him and being with him and at the same time having a little distance, because poetry does involve, after you do the writing, some crafting. That moves you back a little bit. And it also gave me hope in a very strange way that I didn't realize until I was out speaking to different audiences and reading the poems, and people would ask me how I could say that the poems, writing these very tough poems, because if you when you read them, they're not easy poems, and they gave me hope in this strange way that I would be working on something like the poem Kill School, which I'll read to you tonight, and I would think, I wonder what Ben's going to think about this. And my friends would say, well, when are you going to show that to Ben? I guess you have to wait till he comes home. And that was the thing, you know, when he came home, then I would show him what I'd written. And so writing, in a way, was a way of keeping memories alive that I wanted to keep alive on the page. And it was also a way of telling myself that he was going to come home. And we were so lucky that he did come home. So I'm going to read you some poems from The Warrior. And I like to start with The Barn Swallows, because Ben did go to West Point. He graduated in 1998. And in 1998, there was no war. Clinton was still president. It was such a beautiful day, that day of graduation. All the cadets were so beautiful. I don't know if any of you have been to a graduation at West Point, but I mean, they are shining. They are so beautiful. And sky completely clear, no clouds. And this poem tells a little story of something that I experienced during the graduation. The Barn Swallows. My son is always leaving. Sometimes he looks back and waves goodbye. Sometimes he just disappears. Where is he now? In the air, returning from Poland? On the ground, training at Fort Bragg? The day he graduated from West Point, the sun was so bright, I couldn't see the Secretary of Defense, a dark speck under the white awning, on a makeshift stage, saying something about the world, about danger, a different kind of war. No one else seemed to notice the barn swallows swoop in like a swarm of enormous black butterflies, their throats bloodied, marring the brilliance of the sky. They arrived out of nowhere, the way my son was suddenly a man. As each new lieutenant shook the secretary's hand, the swallows dipped and keened over the field, the barracks, those gray castles of learning, the dead generals bronzed on pedestals. What had drawn them to this moment, the red sash and the saber? What had drawn my son to this life? Where had it come from, his certainty of purpose? When I was my son's age, I had no faith. Now I believe in the prescience of wings, each bird, its presentation of colors, bearing the messages we pray will never come. Looking down through borrowed binoculars into the perfect rose, I searched for his face. You would search for this face, right? I've got to tell you, I could not find him. And I thought I would think that I found you, and then then it was somebody else. It was. I didn't want to say that, but they're all gorgeous. They're all gorgeous. So Ben did graduate from West Point, and he served for 2.5 years. Their obligation is 5 years. And then he called me one day and told me that he was going to go into training for Special Forces. And couldn't talk him out of it. So the odd thing was that his first day of Q course, the qualification course, for Special Forces took place on 9/11. September 11th, 2001. He was out in the woods in North Carolina, couldn't be in touch with him. I think it was 4 weeks that he was out there. And he made it through Q course, which is really saying something, and went on with the training. It went on for quite a while, and he really couldn't talk about the trainings, except for just a very few things. And there was one story he told me that made an impression, and I actually wrote this while he was in Iraq. But this is a story from his training. Kill school. That was the summer he rappelled down mountains on rope that from a distance looked thin as the drag line of a spider. Barely visible, the tension he descended into the made-up state of Pineland, with soldiers from his class. They started with a rabbit, and since my son was the only one who'd never hunted, he went first. He described it. Moonlight, the softness of fur, another pulse against his chest. The trainers showed him how to rock the rabbit like a baby in his arms, faster and faster, until every sinew surrendered, and he smashed its head into a tree. They make a little squeaking sound, he said. They cry. He drove, as he told me. You said you wanted to know. I didn't ask how he felt. Maybe I should have. But I was biting off the skin from my lips, looking out beyond the glittering line of traffic flying past us in the dark. So Ben went to Iraq twice. And quite honestly, when I started putting this together as a manuscript, I thought about calling it Waiting, because that's what it was. And there is a poem called Waiting, and I'm going to read that one to you, and I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Waiting. In my dream, a girl floats on a raft. She bends, pulls from the river a small, dark, winged thing, brings it to me. A stone, John, my son's first name, the one we never use, chiseled into it. I'm half awake, 5:15 a.m., 1:15 p.m. in Iraq. On the way to the doctor, I carry the dream in my body over the snowy walk past Woolman Rink, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. in Iraq. Ben has asked for warm clothes, lip balm. I'd forgotten it could get cold in the desert. In the beginning, all the stories were about the heat, anguished faces, that Iraqi man on his knees caught in crossfire, the futile container his arms were around his small son. 9 a.m., 5 p.m. in Iraq. As the cold dime of the stethoscope sweeps my back, I imagine Ben underground in a concrete room, maps spread out on tables, tacked to walls. He moves from map to map, never leaves the room. This is how I keep him safe. The vertigo started in March when he told me he would be deployed. I sat down on the sidewalk at the corner of 43rd and Broadway, waited for the spinning to stop. 12 p.m., 8 p.m. in Iraq. The technician gives me earplugs, presses the button that slides my body into the white tunnel, where harsh knocks and alarms hammer out the map of my brain. Hidden in its burning pigments, the memory of my son when he was 3, sitting by a window, waiting for the rain to stop, so we could walk through the mud to the lake, where we would place our hands on stones, let ladybugs crawl all over them. I believed if I was present for his football games, he wouldn't get hurt. That if I made the 2-hour drive from Stamford to Ramsey in half the time that day he ran into a tree, I could keep him whole in his body. Mid-afternoon September after Beast, that first training plebe year, I fixed him in my mind, and he called later that evening. Mom, were you at West Point today? And I said no. But I thought I saw you on the plane. I said no, but what time did you see me? And he named the moment I'd prayed for him. I thought it had something to do with our heartbeats, like clocks placed in the same room. Once, I believed I could close my eyes and know, even when my son was on the other side of the world, if he was alive. One of the real joys of having these poems to share with you is that Ben has been able to come to so many of the readings and so many of these events. And people have asked him questions that I have not asked him. And so I'm finding out answers to things that actually I wanted to know, but in such a beautiful way, hearing him respond to, you know, people in the audience who want to know what it's like over there and who want to know how he feels about these poems. And I found out that he has a favorite poem, and so I'm going to read that one to you now. And it's called Letters. Before he left for combat, he took care of everything. Someone to plow the driveway, cut the grass. And the letter he wrote me, just in case, sealed, somewhere in a drawer, can't be opened, must be opened if he doesn't return. I feel for my keys, hear his voice. Less is better. Late for work, still, I linger at the window of the century florist, a bowl of peonies, my face among the tulips. Last Mother's Day, when he was incommunicado, nothing came. 3 days later, a message in my box, a package. The mailroom closed. I went out into the lobby, banged my fist against the desk. When they gave it to me, I clutched it to my chest, sobbing like an animal. I spoke to no one, did not apologize. I didn't care about the gift. It was the note I wanted, the salt from his hand, the words. I don't normally, in my writing, turn to myth. I've always felt like, it's a terrible thing to say because a lot of great writers do, but I always thought, oh, that would be a crutch, you know. I got to just pull it out of somewhere, the poems. But when Ben was over there, I actually went back to Homer. And I can't explain it, but I just really felt some comfort reading about Thetis, the mother of Achilles, who, you know, we're all mortal, but she was a goddess, and she had to deal with the same things and was helpless to stop him or to save him from his fate. And I don't know why, but I kept being drawn back to that story again and again, and I wrote pages and pages and pages. And this is the little bit that remains and is in the book. It's called Thetis. Her son was going to do what he was going to do. He was headstrong and beautiful and couldn't imagine he would ever die. From where she slept in the depths of the sea, she heard his cry and did what sons despise. She intervened, commissioned divine armor, lobbied Zeus. It's the same when you see your son fall in with a bad crowd. He's 13 and won't listen. So you stop by the school on your way home from work, tell the principal, and quietly, he takes an interest in the boy. Isn't that your job? To whisper in the ear of any god who'll listen, please protect him. So, here in the States, you know, so many parents are going through what I went through, and some not lucky, like we were lucky. But it's the same over there. There are a lot of mothers over there who are losing their children and who are suffering. And somehow I just felt like I cut a lot of pictures out of the New York Times. And there was one picture in particular that finally I just felt I had to write something for those mothers and for those children. So this poem is called Morning in Sodor City. And it's Mourning. After Adilal Khazali's photograph of five Iraqi women grieving next to the coffin of a child killed in a string of mortar attacks in the New York Times, May 2, 2007. When I hold the loop over their faces, no question which one is the mother. She lies on her side in the dirt, shrouded in the dark robe of the poor. Her face almost peaceful, as if she too has died. The others weeping tilt in her direction. All that black, like a fury, bleeds around the lidless box. Splintered slats of wood thrown together so quickly they don't meet at the corners. Inside, the lost child, wrapped in white embroidered cloth, seems to shine through the threads. The woman in the foreground holds an infant the way a bride would carry her bouquet a measured distance from her waist, as if this beauty too will perish. Ink from their robes rubs off on my hands. I have a favorite poem too. And it's the oldest poem in the book. It took me 9 years to write this poem. I don't know if any of you write poetry, but do any of you? Are any of you poets? No? Well, some poems come, you know, fairly quickly, but a lot of them take a really long time. And this poem I started in 1998, and I finished it last year because it took that long to get to the last lines. And the way that works is you work on it for a little while, and then you put it in the drawer. And then 6 months, a year later, you pull it out again. Maybe something happens. Maybe you have a dream or somebody says something that triggers, oh, I want to go back to that poem. So this poem means a lot to me because I learned a lot about my son on this day. And it's called The Power Lifter. Arvin Jim, West Point, 1998. The doors swung open on the smell of baby powder, sweat, and chalk. Discs of steel crashed to the court, their thunder echoing from the high beams down through the bleachers, where the fathers receded on the sidelines, and the mothers, like nervous schoolgirls, laughed, gossiped, while they waited for their sons to take the floor. Jean Good, whose shoulders I rubbed that night, is dead. She wore a wig, her hair just growing back from chemo. She wanted to live through ring weekend, her son's graduation. Most of them too small to be football players for Army. They were the power lifters, full of combustion, desire to show someone, a father, a mother, they could carry the whole goddamn family on their backs. One kid's pec split open on a lift. Another broke his wrist. I watched my son deadlift 500 pounds, drag the bar up his powdered legs, right palm up, left palm down, the lock. His face red and twisted as it was the night his father left. He pulled himself up, gripped the bars of his crib, refused to be held. He'd asked us both to be there. His father smoked at the gym door. I held hands with Jean and screamed his name. He got a rush from it, but his eyes bled and he wouldn't stop. His body his to sacrifice. I didn't look away. It would have been betrayal, the hours he'd spent building his tolerance for pain. He was prepared, right there, in the middle of the gym, to crush his heart. Welcome. Glad you made it. Ben really loves the planetarium. You're going to have to stop me. You know, you'll just raise your hand when it's enough. He really loves the planetarium in New York, and I don't know how many of you have been to Manhattan. There's a beautiful planetarium called the Rose Center, and I feel like I should be a spokesman or a spokeswoman for the Rose Center because it's a planetarium where you're not only looking up at the stars, but you're sitting in the stars the way they've made it. There is a dome, but the stars are all around you. And then sometimes they have these holograms that just whoosh, they just go right through you. I mean, it's just, I get chills even telling you about it. It's so beautiful. I need to go back. But it's one of Ben's favorite places in the city. And when he came back from Iraq, it was one of the first places, maybe the first place that he asked to go. And so I've written several poems from the planetarium, because when he was in Iraq, I used to go to the planetarium by myself in the middle of the day when there weren't crowds and sit in the stars and think about him and sort of be with him in a way. So this poem is called Home on Leave. Home on leave, with so little time, he paces outside the planetarium while I rest on a slate bench. It has rained all morning, cutting the brutal heat. His face is still beautiful, more serious, his shoulders built up. He shakes his head and says, I use the word brutal too easily. He has another life where he stuffs a plug of tobacco inside his cheek, straps a knife to his thigh, searches the homes of strangers, alert to anything that moves. In that life, he knows the difference between killing and murder, that even though the children are frightened, he must keep his helmet on. He buys our tickets as if I were the child, ushers me to the second floor, where we disappear into galaxies vast and moving too fast to take notes. From the moment he arrived, all he wanted was to enter this sphere together, to fumble for seats indistinguishable from the others in the black bowl of a sky not yet turned on. A voice in the dome tells us, behind each star we can see, the night hides millions more, like the words we don't say, behind the ones we use to get through moments like this, when too much time has passed between us and every visit could be the last. What is a star? Just another body that will live and die driven by fire? Who dreamed it into life before space gave it a home? Questions a mother doesn't think to ask as her small son points to its shining. Above us, hunters and heroes morph into necklaces strung from carbon and dust. They spiral farther and farther away. We can't touch them. We can't touch any of them. Though the voice says every atom of oxygen we breathe was made inside a star. If they're in our blood, why must they be so distant? I don't know where he's going or how far apart we might drift. Our seats rumble. The earth whirls through us. He will leave again. Again, I'll be broken. A relic of that young woman I was when I stood over his bassinet and hoped his rash would heal if I changed to cloth. Maybe two more? That sound good? Well, I'd like to read you a poem. There are actually two poems in this book about dogs in Iraq. And I'm going to read you the one about the puppies, because there actually are dogs in Iraq from the stories that I've been told, actually not by Ben, but by some other young soldiers in the city who I've met along the way, who've been willing to share their stories with me, that there are wild dogs in Iraq, and they're starving, and they're actually dangerous, and they will attack anyone. So there are two. There's the one about the dogs that attacked, and then there's the poem about the puppies. And I'm going to read you the one about the puppies, because I think it's a little softer. Email from a secret location in Iraq regarding the puppies. Now, this is a little note from Ben, because he emailed these puppies to us, pictures of these puppies to us. And so this was his little note. Here are some pictures of the girls. They're a little dirty from chasing cows away from the trash pile. Still seeing right? I click on the puppies, their noses smudged with dirt. They play fight, take each other's legs and tails into their mouths. They don't bear down. They have no sense of lastness. Work will come later. Farm dogs, guard dogs, trained to sniff out mines. Beyond the frame, there are cows, which suggests a pasture, chickens maybe, eggs. There could be a garden, vegetables, staked vines, and a house with room enough for 10 or 12 men who call it home, sleep, cook, play cards. On missions, they're away. Whatever it is they do, a mystery that must remain a mystery. When my son was small, I set boundaries, first the yard, then our street, our block. Later, lost on a back road in Virginia, I let him take the wheel, dark but for the car's high beams, a few stars. He told me, I want to be a soldier. I thought he'd change his mind. Just 15, his future as invisible as the fields we passed. I was happy for the sound our words made on the air. Will he come back? I print the puppies out, fold them into my days, motherless, nameless. Call them joy's wild sisters. Call them glory. Call them love's hidden window in a burning world. He's shot each picture from above, betrayed nothing of the place. One pup rests her chin on his knee, her ears laid back and down against her head, her mouth slightly open, whiskers so still they tremble, the way the lashes of the dead seem to move. I am struck by the decency of sunlight, his hand on her head, light passing through that touch, the gold hairs on his arm, her gold fur. I look and look as if by looking I can keep them in the world. A lot of the poems are just about keeping him in the world. From the very first moment, I have to say, Ben, he walked early. I remember he was so tiny, he could walk under tables. And you know, he went from crawling to running. So it was a job to keep up with him. He's so good to just sit and let me tell these stories. Okay. You'll correct everything later, right? Okay. All right. This is called The Canal. It's the last poem in the book, and it's one of the three poems that I wrote before Ben went to Iraq. Most of the book was written from 04 to 07 when he was deployed and a little bit after he came back. But this is an older poem. The Canal. Home to carp, fallen leaves, their crisp veins melted into the murky mirror. One of the lake's long fingers licking back below an underpass into our midst. Catcher of seeds and insects, feathers and clouds. The face of my boy, barely three, belly down on the worn planks of the dock, swirling a stick, stirring up something. Then the water opening, taking him, closing over his head as if nothing had happened. I looked up from my book into his absence. What is it called when the body takes over, pumps the legs to the right spot, plunges the arms down through the surface, trusting the hands to haul him up, swaddled in slime, still holding his breath, all the life he's kept from the water, loosed in one fevered shriek. God can be whatever you want, a broken mirror that sees all aspects at once, the fearless child, the mother distracted, the loneliness of the water. Thank God for the circles still visible, the center discernible. Thank God for good hearing, strong legs. I carried him shivering into the house, lathered his mottled shoulders and belly, shampooed the cap of silt from his hair. Little body, wet in my arms, twice born. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on April 29th, 2008.